Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Wandering Road Podcast. I'm your host Chris, alongside my co-host Dean, and joining us for today's show is our friend JJ from Southern Demonology. And today we're going to be tackling the topic of the Chronovisor. Is this one of the Vatican's best kept secrets, worst kept secrets, or is it a complete hoax? How are you doing tonight, gentlemen?
I am hanging in there.
I'm fine as well, but you know, it's really funny how things repeat. You know, we just fall into the same routine sometimes, but I think the same exact thing happened to us the last time all three of us were on. We had like the best banter before we got onto the recording. We were like laughing and telling really funny jokes that I think like would have been really great. And now like I'm thinking like it's going to feel so forced to try to inject them back into the audio. We really like next time, guys, we have to record earlier and just like get the funny shit on there first, because it would be so great.
I completely agree.
Y'all just want to get canceled, don't you?
We're already canceled.
We're already canceled.
You can't get canceled if you don't have any fans.
Story of our life.
We're just in an echo chamber. This is, you know, we're just talking in circles.
Our five views from the rundown and JJ.
Yeah. JJ, we were talking about that awesome piece of artwork you have on your back wall there, and it's very unique. It's like, do you want to describe it real quick?
Sure. So it is a piece of canvas, and if you're familiar with the term, it's called tufting. It's where you take this giant needle gun and you inject a specialty thread into it, and it forms like a luxurious looking carpet if you do it right. And so the background is all red, and then I did my old logo in black and white on top of that, so it looks like a floating demon head. And then I got it pasted on my back wall along with some sound absorbing foam panels.
That is so cool. And even like looking at it through the camera, I just have like, I don't know if it's like the demon part or just the comfort part, but I just like compelled to touch it because it looks so comfortably soft. And I didn't even know that it was like a carpet, like you were saying, you put it on there. But we were just looking up because I had never heard of tufting. And I'm like, okay, I got to take a look at this because JJ is talking about shooting like a needle gun at a canvas. And I'm like, okay, that sounds interesting. And I'm not thinking it's going to be much like maybe like a single handheld device. But I pull up the picture and it looks like a freaking submachine gun, right? And JJ, you're saying like, what were you saying? Like, it was just so much fun to do that, like hold it like a machine gun and just drive the needle in.
Oh yeah. And it takes so like, it's really hard to be accurate with it because it imparts so much force in that needle. And it's a pain in the butt to thread the needle, and you have to do it every single time you happen to make a mistake. But your arms are sore afterwards because you're just sitting there holding it and you're trying to hold it steady, and you can sit there and pivot the front end so you can direct the travel as you're doing it. It's a lot of moving parts to it. It's definitely a complex. I couldn't imagine trying to do this as like a hobby, because you'd have to build wooden frames to hold the canvas. You'd have to bolt it into place. And then you're sitting there and like injecting thousands of lines of needles all at the same time to get the thread in place right. It's a pain in the butt, but it was a lot of fun though.
I imagine like some grandma, like really frail and old, and she's just like, come here, dearie, I'm going to show you how to do some kind of artwork. And you're like, oh, okay, grandma. And then she rolls up her sleeves and she's got like Popeye forearms, and she just pulls out this machine gun needle. Let's get busy, son. And she's like, and she's like, holy shit.
You know, there is one way we could go back and see JJ do this. With the Chronovisor. All right, gents. So who wants to take a stab at telling our audience what the Chronovisor is, was, and if it existed or not? Well, let's just start with what it was or what we assume it to be.
So I'll give the non-Catholic perspective first, because I'm the fallen one of this group. Heathen. So essentially
I'm the unbeliever. Sean.
Get the needle gun. I think that the coronavirus, like, or sorry, God damn it. I knew I was going to do that.
The coronavirus.
I knew I was going to do that. Oh, God damn
now
it.
Now we know what the origin of the plague was. Oh, my God.
Exactly. You just like, you look through the coronavirus.
Dude. Last election was Trump versus Biden. KC beat San Fran in the Super Bowl. What's coming in this March? Your coronavirus?
Oh my God, dude. I you know what's funny is like,
I'm not a conspiracy theorist, guy. Don't worry.
Yeah.
I'm just
kidding. you got your tin hat on the side there. But I knew that was gonna happen at some point, because like my brain is just so fried this week, and every time I read chronovisor, I think coronavirus, and it just slipped out. But so the chronovisor, but the name itself is funny to me, because when I think chronovisor, I think of like, it doesn't really sound nefarious. It doesn't really sound creepy. It just sounds like maybe something you go buy at Walmart, like you put on your chronovisor hat, you know, like to count your cards or your money or something, like one of those like see-through visors. It's not really the best name, in my opinion. I think the chronovisor is a small device that some people purport allows others to see into the past, and even some theories that it allows remote viewing of the present. But I haven't heard of any talk about being able to see the future. So I don't know if you guys heard anything different, but that's like the ultra simplistic version of what the chronovisor is. And then I'll switch it over to you guys. You could talk about the Catholic angle of that.
Go ahead, Chris.
No, after you, sir.
So this thing is supposedly buried in the infamous Vatican archives. And it was developed in conjunction with the Vatican. And supposedly, the way that it's supposed to function, and how many times can I say the word supposedly in a row? It operates by being able to predict the exact placement of molecules or of atoms, and is able to then reassemble what those positions would be so it can mimic light and then bring up images that had already happened in the past. And supposedly, it was then able, like they were able to tune in to the crucifixion of Christ and see it live.
So is it supposed to be like a screen through which you can capture and transmit audio visual, or is visual it like you put only. It on? Oh, visual only. Okay. But you, do you put the device on and it kind of takes
no,
you?
No, it's like a freestanding TV, essentially.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, you would think it would imply putting it on with a name like visor. You can almost picture like a VR helmet nowadays, but yeah. Supposedly not, but who knows?
Yeah, apparently, I think it was it Father Ernetti was the one that was, I think what sparked this whole thing was that he was listening to recordings of old Gregorian chants or something of that sort. And apparently he heard his father like arguing with someone about shoes or something like that. Cause I forgot the line of work his father did, but it was something in the lines of like, he was a shoemaker or something of that sort. And that particular part of time, he heard his like father arguing with someone. And that's where he got the idea of like what you said before, the molecules and whatnot. Is it possible to pinpoint with a device the exact shape in them all together to see into the past, essentially, if I explained that correctly?
Yep, you got it.
Yeah, I was trying to explain it in layman's terms. So what do you guys think about the potential of this device existing? Because to me, I would love for something like this to exist, in the sense that not oh, because they claim to have seen the crucifixion or the Last Supper, the betrayal of Judas, and all that stuff like that. I what really caught my attention was that they claimed to have seen Cicero addressing the Senate and other historical things. I think it would be really interesting to have some type of device like that, that, I mean, albeit it would put a lot of people out of business, like history books and stuff like that, but it would give us a decisive look into the past and no longer have to try to formulate what we think happened or what we thought was said based off of primary source material that, you know, 9 times out of 10 are biased. Like if you look at Roman source material, depending on the author, depending on the time period in which they're writing, most of those works were catered towards emperors' eyes only. So they would portray them in a particular fashion. They would portray an event in a particular fashion. But wouldn't it be awesome to have some sort of device where we could just switch it on? And it's like, okay, where do you want to go? This date? What date? What time? And like, what, you don't think the Ten Commandments was a thing? Why don't we go and take a look? So, I mean, just the whole concept of that, not to prove like religion or anything like that, but just from the historical perspective, it would be interesting to see, okay, one side says this, the other side said this. Well, why don't we go take a look at it and see what exactly happened?
You know, I'm actually surprised that we have gotten to this point already. I was kind of saving this in my back pocket for deeper in the conversation, but clearly I was proven wrong. It's going to come out immediately. So I just have to address this right away. We talked about something similar to this. I think it was like our very first episode, actually, between Chris and I, and it was the episode on artificial intelligence. And we talked about artificial intelligence and using that in education and in conjunction with virtual reality. You could essentially someday envision a time in which someone goes to school, puts on a visor, and is able to interact directly with a three-dimensional individual who like representing someone from history, like Abraham Lincoln or something, or at least be present to see the address or, you know, experience that. And the reason I bring that up is because I really do feel like it's possible that we are getting to a point where something like the chronovisor could exist. I mean, I'll just do spoiler alert, you know, like I personally don't think the chronovisor for a bunch of reasons is legitimate. I think the story is fabricated and I don't give a lot of credibility to parts of the story, especially as we talk about later, like there's the supposed photos that ended up being pictures of paintings. We'll talk about that later. But I do think that at some point in human history, it is theoretically possible to reach a point of technological advancement with like supercomputing, quantum computing, especially, and artificial intelligence, to where maybe we really can calculate or come close to calculating the evolution of humanity on Earth and get pretty darn close to a physical representation, not while it's not truly the actual event itself. It's like getting very close to the likelihood of what that time would have been like and the people would have been like when you're interacting with them and stuff like that. So maybe that is possible to actually see how the events, how they probably played out. But in terms of actually seeing the true event, I'm skeptical that that could ever be possible. I think that for that to be possible, there'd have to be some kind of multiple layers of reality that can be peeled back through technology or accessible through technology. Like there was some discussion about, bending gravitational waves and imprints and how they continue on. And I think that's kind of what the Arnetti guy was getting at when he purported to hear his father. He was kind of suggesting that some of these things continue on in the ether, and then you could somehow detect them later on. But those are like impressions from the real events that happened before. But isn't it scary, though, to think about that we do live in a time now, not too long after this event happened with Arnetti and the chronovisor, to where we can actually theorize that it's possible that we might actually be able to create something that does this, at least gets close enough to how things actually reacted. But then actually, I'm going to flip it back to you real quick, Chris, because I want to get your perspective on this. You were saying that, you were going to show, or if you were able to show something like this to somebody to prove to somebody else that this happened, I think that the argument is we've now reached a point where you would never be able to prove it, because even if you could show someone something like this, like things happening in the past or whatever, there would be no confirmation because technology has reached such a point where there'd be no attribution or confirmation of the things that are happening. So you would actually, even you yourself would never be able to confirm, because now we know things like that can be faked with AI and computers and just technology as it exists today. And imagine 100 years from now. So that was like a super long rift, but I had to get that out there first, because I don't think we could talk about this conversation with the Chronovisor without talking about the point of technology in which we exist today.
Yeah, you make some good points, Dean, especially about, you know, the use of technology with to support your point. Just recently, I think it was like a couple weeks ago, this bank, I can't remember the name of the bank, but they got duped into sending these guys like thousands of dollars because they used the deep fake.
$25 million.
Yeah. So yep. You know what I'm talking about.
I do indeed.
Yeah. They used the deep fake of the CEO and potentially, I believe it was, correct me if I'm wrong, JJ, and other board members, to essentially approve this money.
A wire transfer.
Yeah, a wire transfer of $25 million. So what you said, Dean, is not out of the question that AI and all these deepfakes and stuff could potentially be used to influence some type of device like that. If we did create something like that in the future, just to view the past. But I think the only way we would actually get confirmation of something happening in the past is if we formulated some sort of time travel, in the sense that either a human is sent back in time, or we sent these little microscopic robot bugs that go back in time to allow us to view without arousing any suspicion of anyone at that specific time period. But I'll digress from that. And I'll use one of JJ's favorite corporate terms. Let's circle back to the creation of the device itself. So we talked a little bit about Father Ernetti. I forget the name of the other father that was involved when they were, essentially the story goes, Father Ernetti and another father, they were sailing down a canal in Venice. And that's when he told him about this device. They were talking about religion and having to prove this and that. And Ernetti is like, we don't have to prove anything because we actually saw the crucifixion. We saw the betrayal of Judas. We saw all of these things happening. Like, we saw this Roman poet writing the poem, and we were able to put it together based off of what we saw. And I wanted to talk about like the creation of the device itself. So Father Ernetti himself was a Jesuit priest, I believe. And on top of that, he was highly respected, and he was like heavily involved with the sciences in the Vatican. And him being such a credible person, there was no reason for him to put his reputation at stake to formulate such an elaborate hoax of something like the Chronovisor device. The claims were made that the people involved in the creation of the device were Wernher von Braun and Enrico Fermi. But I'll toss it to either JJ or Dean if you guys want to pick it up from there, from your thoughts.
So the priest is sitting there, and my first thought as he's telling the story is, I wonder what the dynamic would be between, I mean, maybe even JJ can talk about this in depth a little bit, but like the dynamic between like certain priests and stuff like that, and how there's a structure and a hierarchy, and how certain, I mean, I imagine it's just like any other like closed system, like hierarchy of friends or groups or something like that. Like, not like, I think of priests as all on the same level, interacting the same way, but they're human beings. You know, there's definitely some kind of hierarchy. I'm sure there's some priests who are douchebags to other priests for whatever reason. I'm sure there's some who are ultra nice, but it's just like, it's a closed sphere of humanity that just happens to be part of a structure that is an organized religion. So I think that's the first place to start, just out of curiosity. Like, what do you guys think, based off of like what you've learned about Ernetti? By the way, when I hear Ernetti, every time I say it, I think of Andretti and I think of race car driving. I don't know why. I don't know if I'm the only one who thinks that. But so Ernetti guy, the priest, what do you think his dynamic is? I mean, there are some sources that say he was ultra smart. He was a scientist. But we only have like hearsay about the version of a person he was from a distance. Do you guys think that there is more depth to him? Do you think that he is, you know, was he very devout? What are some other indicators that he was being truthful? Or on the flip side, what are some indications that maybe he was motivated in fabricating the story and kind of like, you know, talking this story up a wall?
Well, I know from my interactions with the Jesuit that they are essentially, you can compare them to the Marine Corps of the priesthood. They are the academics. They usually have at least one PhD under their belt. If they get further along, then they can easily have two. They can lead congregations. However, typically you will find them in either education, teaching in college or higher levels, or, you know, if they're like Malachi Martin, then they could even be advising the Pope or other high officials within the church. So they can play a huge gamut of roles within the church itself, but usually they are very highly respected. Everything does depend upon hierarchy in the church. You know, who do you kiss the ring of? Is a very important question that you always kind of have to ask yourself. But typically the Jesuits flow a little outside of the norms. So in terms of who he was, I have no earthly idea. But typically, I mean, if he came from the Jesuits, then he would have almost instantly earned respect just right off the bat.
That is super fascinating. Even when I was brought up as a Catholic for many years, I had never heard of that. I had heard of Jesuits. I love stuff like this. Like, you hearing about the structure and the hierarchy of any organization is just always interesting, especially if you know of the organization. But it kind of gives you insight to the humanity piece and kind of peels away the layers. And I think that, like, ultimately, I mean, we can always tie this point back into any conversation we have, but like, part of the reason why humans are so limited, and I think one of the reasons why conspiracies come about so easily, is because there is such a lack of penetration to understand certain structures and how things work. And if you can just have a conversation like this, where you meet someone like JJ who has intimate knowledge about how these hierarchies work and how these interactions operate within, you know, closed systems like organized Catholicism and stuff with the Jesuits and whatnot, like, I just feel like that takes away a lot of the mystery behind who Ernetti was and what possibly could have motivated him, or at least, at the very least, it adds more to the story to help us kind of analyze further as to what might be going on in terms of, like, if this is factual or not, or if this actually happened the way that people say it did.
And just for complete reference sake, so I did take spiritual direction from the Jesuits when I was at Harvard. And I seriously considered becoming a Jesuit priest after finishing my master's degree. Didn't quite get along anywhere close to that level. You know, I did study with them for a while, got to know quite a few, attended a church that was solely ran and by the Jesuits in Boston. Loved every minute of it, except for when another Jesuit stepped up and took over for the one that I had been working with. And he pissed me off so greatly that I left and found another Catholic church to attend, because I have never seen someone take such egregious liberties with the Word of God. His heart was in the right place. He was trying to be inclusive to all, which I agree with. But yet, he would sit there and transform every verse when it came to the homily and add in extra words and extra meanings that were not there. And I would leave each one of those masses with my fist clenched. And I'm like, this is not the way it's supposed to be. I'm supposed to feel happy and peaceful afterwards. You know, you get a mixed bag with anyone in the priesthood, but I would honestly rate my innate Catholic knowledge to be much less than y'all's, because you were raised in the tradition And I only came into it, I converted to Catholicism in college. And so there's a lot of missing gaps that I still have in that just because of the fact that I wasn't raised up in it from the beginning.
One thing I want to say that's, it just kind of ties perfectly back into what you were saying. When I was a kid, we would go to Catholic Mass, and I still very vividly remember the times when this is going to be so bad, but like whenever we would sit into the Mass, like we would sit on the Mass, and then the priest would give the sermon and stuff like that, talking about the passages from the Bible that week or that Sunday, you can always tell, like if you were to stand outside and not have ever gone in, and just watch the people as they come out after. You could always tell if the priest talked about a really joyful, happy moment about God's love in the Bible, or like the depths of hell, the darkest depths of hell and sinning and just like the worst shit, because people would come like sludge out and just look exhausted and like depressed. And it's really interesting to me, like you were saying, JJ, that it really depends on the personality. And you, in that moment, you're kind of subject to what the priest is deciding is important that week, or what even what the priest might be going through themselves or feeling or reflecting on, at, you know, being like the point in, through which God is supposed to talk to other people. And I think that ties perfectly back into this professor or Father Ernetti guy, because we'll talk about this later, but there is some speculation that he did fabricate this 100%. And that's an example of how someone who was in the Jesuit faith could be so elevated within that structure, yet we could see reverberations throughout our history about how something he decided to do can affect something so widely, like a conspiracy theory about the chronovisor. So I think that we just touched on something super important for this conversation.
And yeah. Two quick points on that one. This isn't the first time that a Jesuit priest has been highly controversial. You have Malachi Martin, who is probably one of the biggest controversies that has erupted out of the Catholic Church, especially the Jesuits, in a long time. And second, it's not just the individual priest, but it's also the diocese that you happen to be operating in. Like, I was brought up in the Richmond Diocese, which is very touchy-feely. They use music during masses. And it's, you know, a very welcoming community by and far. And then, you know, you switch over to the Arlington Archdiocese. It is strictly conservative. It is no touchy-feely. It is no music. It is all stern. And yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see the absolute contrapositions that you can encounter even by just moving from one diocese to another, even if they happen to be situated right next to each other. So
one thing that just always comes to mind, you talked about, you know, Jesuits not being too far away, I don't want to say from controversy, like you used the example of the one that kind of forced you to leave the church you were going to, not, you know, telling you to get the hell out, but just by the way he was doing things through his interpretation. And then you have Father Malachi Martin, who I'm a huge fan of. I love his book, Hostage to the Devil. If you have read it, it's such a good book. That dude is just bereft in controversy based on what he said about, you know, like the exorcisms and the Catholic Church and all that stuff. But my question is why do they do it? Like, just because? Like, it's like, okay, because I'm a Jesuit, I could kind of get away with it? Because you think if that was a constant thing, the hierarchy within the church would be like, dude, no, just stop. Your order is just giving us headache after headache. Like, now you're claiming you made a fucking time machine? I doubt they... they probably did swear. Because what we see on the outside is not what actually happens behind closed doors. So,
In fact, you can think of priests as being completely innocent, but you also from priests get the age-old questions of, you know, can I smoke while I pray, or can I pray while I'll smoke? I mean, there's a ton of irrelevance that's going on in the background. You're always are going to have rebels. And I think we pulled out some of the most extreme cases of Jesuits going rogue, but by and far, I don't think that's the case universally, but then again, I'm not in a position to know, so I can't really be the authoritative source on that one.
Right. Dean, you remember Duquesne? They had that one restaurant dining place at the bottom level of the student union, and they had this big ass door that was a giant fridge. And whenever they opened it, it was Father Hogan's like alcohol stash, like just filled with fucking beer and all of this. Oh my God. I think Father Hogan was from Ireland. And then you had the other father. I can't remember his name. He wore glasses. He was from Scotland. And what was crazy, he was a super talented football player for Glasgow Rangers in Scotland. And in like I think it was like the '70s or something like that. Wow. And he was on par of being a superstar. And for some reason, he just, I can't remember what he said, but he kind of just had a calling to join the church. And he was there now. He's like, dude, I left behind like a fiance and all this stuff, like good money. Yeah, it's crazy. But I'll digress from that. Back to the Chronovisor. What I find interesting is that he claims, like we said before, Von Braun's involvement. So those of you who do not know who Von Braun is, he was a former Nazi scientist, which I'm not going to let him escape that. Dude was a Nazi scientist that, because of his brilliance, he was brought over here, worked on, you know, it was involved in our space program.
Yeah, NASA. He was the director of NASA.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, by the way. Think about that for a second. I always like to use examples from history. And one of the freshest conflicts that we still have in our memories as Americans is the war on terrorism, right? So imagine like we were fighting Al-Qaeda or something like that, and then we captured a massive amount of their leadership, and like they had one of the smartest people alive on, like, can you imagine, like, oh, now we have one of our enemies, Al-Qaeda, who we captured, who is brilliant. He is now leading, you know, insert whatever American institutional science organization.
Like AI robotics or something.
Yeah, AI robotics. Like Al-Qaeda now working on AI robotics or something like that. That's just crazy.
Or even better, they're now leading Homeland Defense.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, seriously though, like this dude, Von Braun, he was like one of the creators, if not the only, or like the primary creator of the V2 rocket, which the V2 rocket during World War II just decimated. It was one of them. Like, I think that missile was responsible, or whatever the proper term is. I don't know if it was a missile or a cruiser or whatever, but like that was responsible for killing so many British people that it just blows my mind that they still took him on in the scientific community. I mean, I guess they saw his value because rocket technology was so burgeoning, and the US needed to have that edge over the Soviet Union and stuff. That makes sense. But like, it's still crazy to me that he became the director. And you want to talk about conspiracies? I won't go down this rabbit hole, but I just have to say really quickly, if you want to look at conspiracy theories about the structure of American institutions and like the people who occupy places of power, that was like 60 plus years ago, right? And you actually had someone from a Nazi organization or the Nazi belief structure occupy high-level organization in America. And that was 60 years ago. So like, imagine nowadays, like how much more we could have embedded such mentalities at higher levels and stuff like that. It just blows my mind that there's little checks and balances to allow people. It's almost like, you know, we prize people's brains and capabilities more than their personal beliefs. But when you get to a level of technology that we're getting to now, where such a vast amount of control can be placed on other people, then it really does become important what those people in power believe, because they will literally hold the keys to the most advanced weapon technology that we'll ever have or ever see as human beings or ever have ever seen. So I just had to get that out there, and we could tie that back in if you want, or you can cut that out. But like, I just had to put that out there.
No. Those are some good points that you made. And I think a lot of folks gloss over that when we talk about certain people. I think it's really important to highlight, well, me as a historian, to highlight who they were in the past. Just because you were involved in some advanced scientific shit for the United States doesn't absolve you with your involvement in the past, but I'll digress from that. But to go back to the creation of the Chronovisor, you had Von Braun, apparently. You had a team of 12 scientists, according to Father Arnetti. You had the involvement of Enrico Fermi, who came up with the Fermi paradox, right, Dean?
Yeah, that's right.
You like
right
to refer to that every now and then. So all of these people that were supposedly involved, especially Fermi and Von Braun, they never talked about being involved with something like this. Now, I don't know if it was due to NDAs or something of the sort of like, we are powerful as an organization and we can make your life a living hell if you ever say anything, you know, which could be in the realm of possibility. I wouldn't put it past any strong institution. But none of them talked about it. And I think it was on his, I don't know if it was close to the end of his life, Father Arnetti kind of recanted saying he made the whole thing up. But JJ, I'll come to you. You've been awfully quiet. I know you had quite a few things to say about this topic in general. So what are your thoughts?
Now, I'll lead off with this. So if we look at quantum mechanics, right, you can only know the spin and or the direction. You cannot know both of a single molecule, correct? A single particle, I should actually rather say. And so you get this, if you look at, you know, the picture of an atom is vastly different than what we learned in school, where you have the position of the electron, position of the neutrons, of the, you know, whatever, proton. The electron is actually in a cloud, and until you physically examine that atom, then you won't know where it is. And so it's a diffuse cloud of possibilities. Now take that, and how many atoms are in a piece of sand? A phenomenal amount. How about in the human? A phenomenal amount more. And then you keep amping that up, and you're supposed to know not just these are where this human happened to have been 5 minutes ago, but it's where everything around them happened to have been as well. And that's not accounting for any and all outside forces that could have acted upon these things. For example, when you brought up the idea of gravitational waves, we now know of the gravitational hum from all of the various sources of items that produce these waves. And they may have extremely minuscule effects, but every effect would add up. So you're telling me that somehow they created a device that would allow for direct positioning of billions upon billions upon billions of molecules all at the same time could account for unknown forces that could act upon them and then assemble a picture of photons based upon that? I call utter BS on that. There's no way in hell that could have ever been done. We couldn't do it now. They most certainly couldn't do it then.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And the other thing to consider with that, the way you described it and ultimately the way that they or Arnetti claimed that it worked, then theoretically you wouldn't actually be viewing the true events that happened. You would be calculating and reformulating all of the positioning of the atoms and trying to get as close as possible as to things, how they truly played out. And then you would get the visual representation of how they played out or they might've played out, but you're not actually seeing the true event in the same way that you and all of us were talking 5 minutes ago, whatever we were saying, that point in time existed and is now gone. If there was a way to see that, then that would be ultimately different than feeding it, you know, to a computer and saying like, show me what it probably looked like 5 minutes ago as we were talking. Even if it was accurate, you're still not seeing the true representation or the true reflection of what happened itself. It's kind of just like a compilation of different, like you said, different molecules and positionings. And I think, what is it like, up, down, left, charmed and strange or something, like whatever the spin is on the molecules. But one extra factor that I wanted to throw in as a consideration, and actually not even a consideration, I want to ask you, JJ, do you think that it is possible that there is, and this is going to go way off tangent, we can cut this out, but I really want to ask JJ this. Do you think that it's possible that we don't, in that case, have free will? Because is it possible then that if you did have some kind of near infinite advanced computing technology that could run an insane amount of possible permutations in a millisecond that we could ever come to a level of accurately predicting how things really did play out from, say, 4.5 billion years ago. Like, let's say you put that into a supercomputer or whatever quantum computing system hypothetically that existed. Do you think we could ever reach a level to where we could not only run these permutations, but get an accurate description of how things might have played out over history? Like, let's say you, all you would need is maybe like, just like you only need 3 points in space time to get a, like a single point in space. Like you need 3 points to get to a three dimensional point in space. What if you only needed like 5 or 6 points in time fed into a quantum computer to accurately predict the rest and fill in the blank, the rest of the, you know, the rest of what, how things might've played out. So do you think that's possible? Can we ever actually do that? And even if you take out the technological part, do you think that because we are all made up of molecules and components that, you know, up, down, left, right, all that stuff, like the direction of which the molecules or the atoms and the subatomic particles exist in a super or a position, do you think that it's possible that we don't actually have free will because everything plays out the way, you know, everything is going to continue to play out the way it does based off of the constraints of, you know, subatomic physics and regular physics, if that makes sense?
Have y'all ever seen the movie 13 Ghosts?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, the, you know, the devil's Oculus, that machine that they, that F. Murray Abraham's character builds, which supposedly can, you know, provide, you know, all the knowledge that you ever wanted, and that's powered by the ghost. That's kind of what I imagine if such a machine could ever be built, then that is what it could do. You know, you could tell it, you know, I need to know these answers, and it would be able to go forth and calculate all of this information and then be able to return it. But more interestingly, I mean, that's kind of what we are doing now with ML, machine learning. You know, astronomers, geologists, they are creating these models. They're feeding in all of these parameters and then predicting, you know, looking at the predictions that the models is coming up with. So, for example, we still don't know exactly how the moon was formed. And so, you know, they will feed in these models and they'll say, oh, well, if there was another planetoid called Theta that crashed into Earth, then they were able to actually look at particle physics and examine what that resulting, you know, collision resulted in, and that could form a moon. And that has now become one of the leading theories, but it's not based upon direct evidence. It's based upon an ML model that's feeding us this information. So I liked your point around that. But in terms of the free will aspect, I think it's a question that the entire discussion of the chronovisor avoids very neatly because of the fact that it can't look at the future. There really should be no way that it could not do it. If we can predict where all of the various molecules happen to have been, then why couldn't you do the same thing to where they are going to be? And if that was the case, then I doubt it. But I forget the author's name. It's a British author. And he wrote a series of books around a magician who happened to be a diviner. They practiced divination. And the way that it was depicted was whenever he enacted his magic, it would be able to peek into the future, examine all of the various possibilities, and then he would be able to reach out, even if it was the most remote of possibilities, grab it and make it manifest to be the most probable event that would happen. And that's what I would kind of imagine it would be. So if I'm able to look at all the various positions that everything could be in, which one would be the most likely? I still don't think that it would be an absolute determiner because anything can still happen, but yet you're able to broadcast at least this is what is likely to happen, if that makes any sense.
And yeah, I just want to jump in there real quick, guys, because you guys mentioned about it potentially being able to see to the future. But if we stick to what Father Ernetti claimed, that the chronovisor only tuned into audio visual signals of the past, so it essentially worked by detecting, interpreting the residual electromagnetic radiation or echoes that were believed to exist throughout time. Now, would that, those echoes throughout time, take into consideration the future? And then we get into the realm of, is all time happening at the same time? As in, as of right now, like, the same time we're recording this podcast, Julius Caesar is getting stabbed at the same time. You get what I'm saying? Time is not, okay, there's past, future, present. In our minds, they are. But for the sake of discussion of time itself, it's just all happening at the same time.
I think that's like the last bastion of hope for free will, in my opinion. If you throw in the factor of like quantum physics and stuff like that, where we now know that, well, we don't know, it's a theory, but there's a superposition of states, you know, just like, what's that theory about the cat, in the box,
Schrodinger's cat.
Yeah, Schrodinger's cat. And we kind of like, you know, there's kind of hints that such a thing is true. And if you're not familiar, Schrodinger's cat is basically like, you put a cat in a box and there's like a vial of poison or some contraption that either releases poison randomly, or uranium. Thank you. And, you know, whatever happens to the cat, if it's exposed to the uranium or not at any given time, it's either alive or dead, but it doesn't become the state of alive or dead until you open the box and collapse the quote unquote wave function. And, you know, basically what they're saying is conscious visualization of the state in which matter exists at a given time is what is required for it to become that ultimate state, which is interesting if you tie it back to the chronovisor, because you're talking about humans who potentially created a device that allows viewing of an event. But by viewing that event, there seems like there would be some kind of additional subatomic occurrence happening because of that, you know, because the consciousness is observing or measuring that thing, that event again through the chronovisor, which is another factor of interest. Even if the chronovisor is just complete bullshit, which I'm on your side, JJ, I think it's kind of like a little bit, it's not really believable, but just hypothetically speaking about such a possible device, you know, you see in quantum mechanics nowadays where with like this, the slit test or whatever, where they shoot the particles through.
The double slit test thing.
Yeah, exactly. And like there was something creepy going on where, you know, when they would look at it and measure it, the randomness would disappear, even though the photon would become a wave or the wave become a photon or something like that and change into physical matter. I think that points more to nowadays, like, the possibility that we do live in some kind of really complex simulation, which to me is the most terrifying thing of anything, you know, the most terrifying idea out of all of the other ones. But if you tie it back into the chronovisor, I think that such a thing is, like you said, it's theoretically possible, but I also think that we are so limited in our understanding of even quantum mechanics that in this very date and time, it would take a massive discovery that would probably come about from something like machine learning or AI driven computing or something like that in order for us to take that next step to even understanding what's going on and how such a thing as the chronovisor or that concept could even exist. So I think it's kind of like, you know, maybe this dude loosely was, you know, he was intelligent, but he just had a tenuous grasp on all these components. And I think that he probably fabricated a lot of the story itself.
To me, and I don't care who you are, if you make extremely bombastic claims, then it requires even greater proof to be able to, you know, to sit there and say that, yes, this thing existed, or, you know, otherwise you have to assume that, no, it did not.
So I think we had some really good discussions about, you know, the scientific aspect of the chronovisor and whether this type of technology, especially coming around in the 60s, or maybe even sooner, because he only told his colleague Francois Brun about the chronovisor in the 60s. So he was kind of implying that maybe this was made a little bit earlier, maybe the 50s or something of that sort. So the whole concept of this technology existing at the time, it makes you think like, well, the transistor didn't come till, well, when did the transistor come? Shortly after Roswell?
Yeah, I think in the 50s. Yeah,
I don't want to sound like a moron. So,
No.
So in the 50s. So if you take in consideration transistor, let's say if we believe his claims of like, you know, top scientists like von Braun and Fermi being involved, that they were able to create this machine. I wanted to go into what they claim to have seen. And Dean, this was something that you brought up to me that you wanted to touch on as well about the claims of the pictures that they took. So they said they took a picture of Christ before the crucifixion. They said they took a picture of Christ with his disciples. They made the claim that they went back and they were able to see the plays of the Roman poet Quintus Aeneas, and they were able to complete the missing parts of the poem in the original Roman Latin. They were able to use the chronovisor to restore that piece of history. But I wanted to touch on that real quick, Dean, if you wanted to jump in there and tell us what the documentaries we watched told us about those specific quote-unquote photographs.
Sure. So that is actually one of the strongest points of contention for me that really dismantled this whole conspiracy theory about the chronovisor and stuff like that. And I have to admit, before I even got into watching the documentaries and doing the research for this conversation, I was like I was actually really into it. I was really interested in the story just for the sake of, because it's always like the Vatican is always interesting to me, like the conspiracy stories. It's like, oh, they have, you know, vaults under the Vatican City and they contain some of the oldest artifacts in Christianity and secrets and all that stuff. And it's just surrounded by intrigue for me. So this story did catch my eye. But as soon as I heard this next part about the photographs, I was like, it completely threw this chronovisor story off the rails for me. I hate to say it, but so the priest essentially offered up these photographs claiming that they are actual photographs, which he took through the chronovisor that captured the instances that he viewed of Christ back whenever Jesus Christ was the time that he was alive or whatever. So these photos, I think, included one was a close-up shot of his crucifixion purportedly, and the other one was the other two shots were him discussing or seemingly to discuss whatever with his followers. But ultimately, we saw not long after that in the documentary that these were actually photographs of famous paintings. And they were weren't just near identical, they were identical. There was no room for interpretation. It was very clear. It was very clear that the priest had taken photos. And as soon as you have the concept where someone who is making, like JJ said, a bombastic claim and offering up like, hey, this is my evidence, as soon as you have it confirmed that this person was full of shit, then that completely, in my opinion, just undoes everything about the whole conversation about the chronovisor. But the last thing I'll say before I flip it back is I still think that there are some stories to be had, some intriguing stories about the secrecy of the Vatican, and not only the secrecy of the Vatican, but how they responded to this. And I think it also reflects really like it's kind of like a chess move. Like, you know, you might still lose the chess game, but when someone makes a decision to make a move, you still get some insight into that person's thinking. If you're smart enough to or aware enough to be in tune to, you know, thinking about all the moves together and everything that happened up the progression. And I think it's the same thing with the Vatican and the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church issued a response to the claim about the chronovisor. I'll flip it back to you to talk about that, but I think that's an important part of the conversation because it really highlights the Catholic Church, how they viewed the situation and how they responded to it really shows their hand in a way about the secrecy and maybe even kind of like playing a game in which it might draw in, you know, potentially more followers to the faith. That could very well have been the motivation to this guy, the priest who fabricated the story. Like, maybe his motivation was kind of good in a way, like to him, like it wasn't really purely evil. It was like he was just trying to draw people in to the faith because he believes the faith is real. But there is some deception there, which doesn't really seem in line with the Christian faith. So I don't know. I maybe if you guys want to explore that, that sounds interesting to me.
So what I wanted to say, you kind of alluded to the church not endorsing this. Well, actually, I think it was like in the 80s or something of that sort. It might have been 1988. I don't have it directly in front of me. The official church stance was that they distanced themselves from the claim of the coronavisor. And they essentially said that anyone that tries to partake in this or does partake in this type of activity is to be excommunicated. And JJ, I wanted your opinion on that, in the sense that why would they say something like that? Like, if we know, I don't want to say without a shadow of a doubt, but we have an inkling that, you know, the coronavisor is fake. We've had people on their deathbeds recant. We've had other, you know, the people that claim to have worked on it never said anything about it. But then here we go. We got the curveball, like Dean said, the chess move of the church, saying, you do this, you're going to get excommunicated.
You can take it in, I think, one of two ways, and maybe the ambiguity is meant, but it could be that it's the church attempting to not only dissuade from someone replicating this type of claim, and whether it's to make it, you know, real, which highly doubtful that could ever happen, or just wasting their time on it. But it could also be that they are trying to dissuade any future claims of fraud, which makes a great deal of sense. If the church is officially warning people away from this, then it could be, you know, conspiracy theorists may say, oh, look, it's proof. There is something here, and the church doesn't want you to look at it. But I take it in the opposite direction, and maybe I'm biased. I'm not saying that I'm not, but the church simply saying it's not worth your time to investigate this. It's fraud. Stay the far away. This is one step above, you know, vitamins and nutrients that can cure X, Y, and Z disease, blah, blah, blah. But the other problem of this is, anytime that you have an organization that purposefully cloaks itself in shadow and secrets, then they are going to naturally invite any and all kinds of speculation to be thrown their way. This is true of the Vatican. I'm a Mason. This is very much true of Freemasonry. Your secret. And so people will just heap anything and everything upon you, and you have zero recourse in correcting it unless you then uncloak the secrets. And that's not something in which they're ever willing going to do. Do I think that the Vatican has some amazing things in their archive? Yes. Yes, I do. Do I think it's fantastical things that are going to revolutionize the world or science or religion? No, probably not. If you sit there and combine all of the quote-unquote true pieces of the cross that have been assembled across Europe, then you get a boat. You don't get a cross. I mean, it's bloody ridiculous. And I think you're going to find a whole bunch of that just being stacked up in lumber yards down there. You know, who knows? It's just one of the unfortunate aspects. People are naturally distrustful. And if they're looking to stir some shit, then they're going to stir some shit. And if you sit there and put everything behind a black curtain, then unfortunately, you just kind of give them an open invitation to do that.
And everyone that used the coronavisor went to hell.
Yay! Ned Flanders.
Yeah, but seriously, JJ, I did want to... It's not a question directed to you. It's just a general question. Either of you feel free to answer it. I always wonder,
with the Vatican archives, like you have to be like an academic or a Jesuit. You have to have all these freaking clearances to actually go and peruse the Vatican archives based off of what they allow you to see. Mm-hmm. Now, I always wonder, like, why so much secrecy? Like, I always wonder, like, what the hell is in those archives and in those texts that could be so earth-shattering? The only thing I could think of, and here's one example I could think of, is that the accusations on the Knights Templar is clearly bullshit, and they have that recorded, and they don't want that coming out, even though it's been like 500 years, 600 years? I mean, to me, as a historian and a person, like all of us here are academics, that's stuff we would love to find out. That's stuff we would love to read. So I always wonder, like you said, you're a Mason, it's a secret society. But is the Vatican a secret society? I mean, you have millions upon millions of Catholic followers of the Catholic faith. Don't they have a right to know what's in the archives of the organization of their faith that claims to be leading their faith? You know where I'm getting at? I'm not trying to get conspiratorial. It's kind of like, why are they being such hard asses with whatever information that they have? Because
You hit the nail on the head. I don't think that they are hiding any earth-shattering tech down there. Rather, I think that when you're an organization that has been in existence for as long as the Catholic Church, you have a lot of secrets that you absolutely do not want anyone to know. And I think that's what you would find in copious amounts in the archives.
So look, I will for the first time openly admit I've done certain jobs and stuff like that partake in investigations and stuff like that. And I always, like, you always have to think about the motive. And by the way, when Chris, when you asked that question to JJ and like JJ openly admitted that he's a Mason, I kind of half expected to like JJ to talk into his cuffling, activate number 52577. And then a cruise missile just comes in, boom.
Now, I'm not saying JJ walks around with the deer heads on or anything like that.
Oh, actually, if you can see that.
The Guild of Calamitous Intent.
Although, so when I was in college, I dated a girl for several years, and her dad worked for the government in D.C., which is code that he was in the CIA. And he took pictures. That's all they could ever say about it. And I knew that one day I was going to wake up and no one would ever hear from me ever again. Thank God that never happened. But yeah, that was the most frightening thing that I went through with that.
JJ, I got to ask you a question. And you're bound to secrecy, so you could tell me shut the fuck up. Templars?
What about them?
Are they the Templars? Like, the theory is that the Masons are the Templars that went underground?
That is the theory. By going through the rites, you don't ever learn the answer to that, to be honest. So I'm pretty sure that they are, but do I have direct knowledge of that? No.
I can cut this out if you want. I don't want to get you in trouble.
Oh, I can't get in trouble over that. I neither confirmed nor denied anything. So, yeah,
I'm not worried about it.
Here's the thing about any organization, including the Masons. And this is okay. Let me just say this is 0% shit throwing whatsoever. But at the same time, any organization that has tens of thousands of members, and we're talking about stuff like, you know, JJ, you're using the example of dating the girl whose father was in the CIA. Like, everybody thinks that, like, the outside looking in, you have this organizational structure of secrecy that everybody in the organization knows everything about every layer of secrets. Maybe some of them do, but I guarantee you, even including like the intelligence community or whatever, like, most people are just fucking people. Like, they don't know the ultimate depths of the secrecy of all the information. And it's just hilarious to me that just because someone is a Mason, automatically people assume who are not a Mason that those people must know some kind of crazy secret, like we're all living some crazy Da Vinci Code story or something like that. It just Chris. Like, by the way, Chris, I'm also a Mason. No, I'm just kidding.
No,
let me put this in perspective. So the town I grew up in was 113 people big, okay? The lodge that I joined, and all of my uncles were members, so I was, you know, kind of shooed into it myself, has maybe 25, 30 members total.
Oh, man.
We're tiny. It's barely a decent-sized room in size. And the main thing that they're known for is putting on pancake breakfasts and then doing chicken dinners, you know, once a year. That's our claim to fame.
Sounds pancake, like my kind of group.
Pancake breakfast is full of Satan.
And we operate underneath Robert's Rules of Order. I mean, it's the most benign thing in the entire world. And yet I have had people, even in my own Discord server, just pour absolute vehemence and hate on me
because
of the fact that, oh my God, you're Catholic and you're Mason? You're going to hell.
Oh, I'm fucking moron.
I thought you were going to say fucking Mormons.
No, moron.
No, I swear to God, if I meet another zealot, I'm going to kick them in the nuts.
Yeah, I think you guys make some good points, especially with the archive and about stuff coming out that shouldn't come out. That would be contradicting to things that they say. And I think it would be more so in the sense that stuff that they said publicly was completely on the inside was the complete opposite. So it would be kind of interesting to see if this ever happens, which I doubt it'll ever happen. They digitize the archive or something like that. And you could actually see the real reason for the Crusades. I mean, we kind of know why it happened. Knights were too busy fighting each other and they just needed to get them out of their backyard and just go somewhere else and play with your swords. Just leave us alone. But on a more serious note, coming back to the Chronovisor as an idea and a concept, like I said in the beginning, yeah, that would be awesome for something to have. And it would be shitty if they did have something and they just kept it from everybody. But again, like you bring up the point, why would you keep it from everybody? Well, if you figure out what they're hiding is the actual truth, it may shatter your entire organization. Now, that's more in reference to the archives itself. I'll throw it back to you guys, whoever wants to go first. Like, what are your final thoughts on this whole thing? I know we kind of agree that the Chronovisor type of stuff is a hoax, but I want to focus more on the morality of it, of someone with such, that was held in such high regard, like Father Arnetti, making up something like this.
Let JJ have the final thought on this, but the thing I'll say about the Chronovisor story is, even though it's likely fabricated, I still find it like this is just the nerd in me, honestly. I know that most people are not thinking like me, which is totally fine, but if I'm just being transparent, I still think the story is fascinating because you're talking about a very potentially brilliant, at least smart priest, right? And as JJ talked about earlier, this guy was tied in with a high level of the Catholic Church. And so he had some respect, he had some intelligence, but I suspect that, you know, even though he fabricated the story, there's probably some degree of psychology that might point to the idea that he was subjugated by his own organization, or maybe he had some regrets about his life or something for sure drove him to tell this story. Like, even if you want to make the argument that he actually believed that there was a Chronovisor, like, let's say hypothetically he came across some manuscript or heard something from somebody in the Catholic Church that this thing existed. Maybe he thought, if I just create this story and draw attention to it, the Catholic Church will be forced to bring it out. It could be anything. But whatever it is, there's a motivation behind his story. And I think that the human psychology and the decision-making behind his story is almost equally as fascinating as the idea that you could somehow, you know, view the past like during the time of Christ or something like that. But he also, either unintentionally or intentionally, maybe he was really this smart, drew attention to the Catholic Church and its secrecy, which we touched on during the conversation. And I have to throw one small joke in here. One more joke. I swear to God, this is the last one, because we were really silly doing this podcast. But one of the documentaries we watched was talking about the Vatican's like secret underground vault. And they showed like some stock footage of a priest like opening up a gate. And during the conversation, or during the monologue, the guy was like, "In the Vatican's secret, deep, super secure underground lair." But then it was like a priest opening up the shittiest, rustiest gate ever. And there was just like boxes of old shit. And I'm like, that's not high security. And I was just thinking, like, I actually asked ChatGPT this. I was like, how secure is the Vatican? Like, what is their security mechanism? Is it really that like crazy, like lasers, like, you know, all kinds of computer systems and audiovisual capturing and monitoring? Like, is it really that secure? And I don't think it probably is. I think like JJ said, they have some cool shit down there that does not include the chronovisor. But I think that probably the reason they keep it wrapped up tight is more likely that there are some things that might be misinterpreted or confused with how they want to be the Catholic Church to be perceived. But in a nutshell, I still think that, you know, while this story is interesting, there's just no indication that things have happened the way that the priest claimed they happened. And there is definitely some embellishment going on, for sure, from his side, but possibly from the Catholic Church's side as well. That's my final thought.
You bring up a really interesting point. You know, what would prompt someone to make this kind of story up? And it's fascinating. Like, have you ever read anything by Martin Heidegger?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Last great master philosopher of the 20th century. Being in Time, or Zeit und Zeit, is probably the most complex philosophical work that you could ever attempt to dig into. And yet, he was an admitted Nazi. How could someone so brilliant believe in something so abhorrent? And there's a phenomenal philosophical biography on him that's called Beyond Good and Evil, which it goes through his life piece by piece, the philosophical ideals that impacted and he responded to. And it paints a picture of how this could have happened. And it's amazing. I would love to see something similar to this on Father Arnetti, because there had to be a driving reason behind it. You know, I think we all know individuals who, even though they are highly accomplished, they still make up shit about themselves. I think Al Gore is a perfect example of this. Someone who comes from a very storied political family and yet would still make very bombastic claims, like he's the inventor of the information superhighway, as we used to call it.
The internet.
Yeah.
And Man Bear Pig.
And Man Bear Pig. How can you forget Man Bear Pig? But yeah, I mean, honestly, I think that is the interesting take on this. And the fact that the chronovisor has gained a second or third or fourth life based upon conspiracy TikToks or YouTube videos now that's all talking about it with AI generated videos. It's just, oh God, I feel my IQ dropping by the second whenever I run across these pieces of trash on the internet. The fact that social media is completely geared toward rage or toward conspiracy is just a sad testament to how we are as a society. You know, we thrive upon engagement and fake internet points. And unfortunately, it has propagated a lot of truly horrible things, such as flat earth and everything else in between. But I think that's my final piece.
And I'm a little guilty of that, JJ. I know I like to send you rage bait just to see your reaction to those TikToks. No,
it is interesting to see the bullshit that regular people just happen to believe in. And I think it's great from, being able to laugh at these individuals. But if you take a step back and look at it, it's also just extremely sad. I'm like, my God, I know that there are people out there that don't know the difference between there and there, but to see them actually believe in this, there's a door in the hill in Oregon, which giants, happen to live behind. It's just, you just want to facepalm.
This is the last thing I'll say. Like, okay, if you are gracious enough to listen to our podcast, thank you so much. We're probably not talking to you because if you are interested in our podcast, you probably have a lot of depth of experience or at least knowledge in this, because there's some interest there that you have, like, built up a base on. It's not just clickbait. It's not just something that, we're not at a level yet where people are just absorbing our information and our discussions and stuff. Like, hopefully we get there someday. But like, I will say, so the people listening, like, I'm basically saying this for nobody, because the people listening are probably already well-versed and skeptical of all information in a good way, because you're just curious people, right? But talking to the broader humanity who is not listening, isn't it amazing? You occupy a time in human history in which you yourself can make the decision to seek out not just one piece of information that might be accurate, but all pieces of information that are available that include accuracy, in which you can make the final disposition and decision based off of your experiences. How amazing is that? Like, seriously, like, if we go back 300 years ago, there was no such thing as vast amounts of information that were accessible by the average person. Like, you literally had hearsay and conjecture. Maybe you would, if you even knew writing, like if you knew how to read some writing, you might get lucky and get some information that was accurate. But now all information, for the most part, is openly available. You just have to use your own discretion and your own questioning of how things work, and just knowing that there might be some information that's true, there might be some information that's false. But if you start the conversation or this, you start the inner monologue with that idea, then you can really grasp and accept and just be thankful for the time in which we live. And I think that tying that back into the chronovisor is really important, because like JJ said, the chronovisor is coming back around. It's making circles again after like 50 or like 40 plus years, almost 40 years now of, the actual events itself. And it ebbs and flows through interest. And like, the doors of giants and stuff like that. It's just like, really, really, really try to reach out and get as much information as possible as we do. Like, we try so hard to go out and do research on all of these topics, and we always maintain an air of skepticism, but the conversation is just as important as the information itself. So I challenge everyone to really reach out there. And if you find something that counteracts or contradicts what we're saying, then contact us and we'll have a conversation about it. Like, we're always open to having conversation with listeners and all that stuff. So please be open-minded, do your due diligence and find the information, and reach out to us if you want to be part of the conversation.
Yeah, actually, on that point, I just watched a short TikTok video that was a lady was going, if you happen to encounter a meme and it's presenting an interesting fact, like, oh, did you know that Romans believe, the reason why we wear our wedding bands on the finger that we do is because it's the only finger that has a blood vessel that connects directly to the heart. That's not correct. Romans used to believe that was true, but all your fingers have blood vessels that go to your heart. I mean, it was like, she said, you can be amazed at the fact, but then go off and research and see if it's actually true. And if you see a meme that's presenting an interesting fact, it's probably just clickbait and not true whatsoever.
So, and then, anyway. and then And sadly, that woman only had 5 views, because that's, like JJ said, that's the indication of humanity and what makes, like, it's all about making money nowadays. Like, how do you make the most bombastic? And the unfortunate part is the people, a lot of the people who believe in the stuff that is so bombastic, they're the ones who post the shit that draws in more people, that gets them more views, that generates more money. So, like, it's like that's the dumb people, not the dumb people, but like the people who are less informed or less interested in the truth or whatever, or seeking the truth, they're the ones who make the most money. So just go, go show your feet on the internet and you'll make $1 billion. And that's all that matters.
Pretty much. I mean, I've been doing my podcast since 2017 and, you know, I've gotten a little bit of success out of it. Does that equate to monetary success? Absolutely not. I am still in the red every single goddamn month. And I, you know, I'm not popular. I will never be popular. I have accepted that. I'm not looking for fame. But yeah, these idiots that sit there and post conspiracy theories, they're getting millions of views. And me, who trudges along and makes academic content week after week, is, you know, getting next to nothing. I'm not saying that there's justice in the world, but if there's ever a case against it, I think that might be at least a small little footprint too.
I just think of Professor Farnsworth from Futurama. It's like, I don't want to live on this planet anymore. Yeah. And it's like, it's I'm ever forever thankful for the life in which we live right now, because like I was just talking with Chris about this the other day, but it's like we have giant TVs on our wall that stream like endless amounts of entertainment, and we can go out to the store and buy the most delicious, healthy foods. And this is, of course, this is like dependent on if you have a good job and stuff like that. But like, still, like it's accessible to a lot of people, way more so than it was like 400 plus years ago. And I'm not saying that we're better than people 400 plus years ago. I'm just saying we have more access to comforts and health related progress and all that stuff. But isn't it interesting how it always comes with the stipulation of something like super advanced technology that can completely rape the shit out of us as a society and just collapse everything if we take the wrong advantage of it, or it just doesn't perform in the way that we need it to perform, or like there's always something in human history that threatens to undo everything. Our, you know, whatever, like the chronovisor comparatively. Like, it's just all multiple levels of advancement that is moving forward. And there's always some scary factor. There's always some factor of confusion. But at the same time, it's like, we're living a pretty damn good life, even though there are a lot of idiots out there. So, like, we try to do our best and have fun as a group and be open-minded.
Yeah. And I'll echo both of your sentiments. You know, we do these topics, whether they turn out to be a hoax, I think they're just fun discussion, and they, yeah, you know, revolve around the theme of our podcast, which is, you know, the paranormal, the unknown, true crime, all that stuff that people find weird. That's like what we like to talk about. Because if I try to talk to my wife about the coronavirus, she's gonna look at me like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, just stop talking to me. Let's just do something else or talk about something else. So this is kind of our outlet. And I know you both of you, I see the smiles on your faces. You have the same exact experience. So
my wife would look at me and go, what? No, get out of here.
You heard it first here, people. The reason why our podcasts all exist is because we have some kind of crazy repression that we're trying to get out onto society. We found each other, and like, this is therapeutic. That's all. Yeah. This is the reason why we exist.
And it's, I mean, yeah, you know, blowing up and, you know, monetizing. Yeah, that's, I'm not going to beat around the bush. Yeah, I would like this to be my full-time gig at some point. And I know, like, we're literally just 11 months in. And JJ, you've been doing this since 2017. And I think it just depends on what you want to do with your platform, whether you want to be informational or whether you want to be those people that just puts out, you know, controversial shit all the time. For me, like, the whole purpose,
like you just want to put out. Oh yeah.
You dirty old man.
And with that, JJ, where can the listeners find you?
Southern Demonology is on all major podcasting platforms. You can also find us online at southerndemonology.com. And I have all of the links to all of our different channels on different social media, YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, the list goes on. And then I am also one of four permanent hosts on the Paranormal Rundown. That's also on all major podcasting networks. And actually, Chris and Dean were recent guests on the Rundown, and we had a great time doing it. So,
and with that, folks, you heard JJ. Go give him a follow. His podcast is awesome. The Paranormal Rundown crew is awesome. They tackle some interesting topics, including what we just talked about today. I think it was probably, what, a couple episodes ago, JJ, where it was sprinkled in there. But again, folks, if you got to this point in the podcast, we appreciate it. If you look up this topic and have a differing view, please contact us. We are open-minded. We're open to conversation with folks with different opinions, and we'd love to have a conversation with you. And we hope you enjoyed today's episode. Thank you for tuning into today's episode of The Wandering Road. If you enjoyed today's episode, please give us a rating on Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And please share the show with your friends, as that would help us grow immensely. Also, be sure to follow us on social media. You can find us on TikTok at TWR Podcast, our Instagram at TW Road Podcast, and our Facebook by searching for The Wandering Road Podcast. If you'd like to get a hold of us, you can reach us at our email address, twroadpodcast@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. We would love to have you on the show as a guest so you can share your stories, or you could submit email submissions of your stories that we could dedicate an episode to. Thanks, and we'll catch you on the next one.